From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In.
They believe that what we're being told is everything they need to know, and they just pay attention to that.
You actually have to teach the teachers how to teach for innovation.
With your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford University, and I am with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, who is dean of the Graduate School of Education.
Hello.
Dan, where's the, you always fine, call fine, me a name.
Fine. Dr. Denise, civically minded Pope.
Oh, I like that.
Okay.
I like that name.
Okay.
What?
I've just thrown you a loop.
You have
let me ask you, sir. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
So you teach college classes.
Yep.
Do you take responsibility for preparing students to engage in public policy discussions? Like, do you broach the current civic issues in class?
I do. Well, one of the classes I teach is curriculum construction. So mm-hmm. there's a lot going on mm-hmm. there. Yeah. There's a lot of politics. We get a different Secretary of Education. We have No Child Left Behind all the way to Common Core to ESSA. We've got a lot of hot stuff happening. So we, yes, I mean, do I tell them how to think? No, but I will say, here's what's going on in Texas in terms of curriculum, and they don't teach evolution in some of these textbooks, and, you know, what do you think about that? So I'll raise provocative questions. Nobody has ever said to me, well, what do you think about it?
Really?
Have they? I'm careful because I have a wide variety of students in many different countries represented. So I am careful about sort of how I take a stand, but I will bring in experts who are very happy to take a stand.
Right.
How about you?
It does. It comes up.
In stats.
Shocking. And I don't always try and make it relevant to stats. I'm not that clever.
Okay.
You know, I don't
okay.
say, well, now let's deconstruct the survey. It comes up. It's interesting. I try and, as a philosophy undergrad, so I kind of try and help them clarify the sides of it. But it's interesting. You know, as dean, I don't take a stand.
Oh, interesting. Right.
Well, if I take a stand as dean in some political position and there's students or faculty who don't agree with me, I'm sort of putting them at risk,
mm-hmm.
right? They're like, well, I better not say what I think because it disagrees with the dean's position.
Right.
So I worry about coming out with a position that stifles academic freedom. And so that I get asked a lot to take stands on certain educational issues, and I sort of don't want to. I have opinions, but if I take a stand and there are people who report to me who don't take that same stand, I feel as though that stops their academic freedom.
I think it's interesting because you do represent the School of Education then. And so is there a role for a university to take a stand? I mean, should they ever? Is it? And certainly there are some universities that are sort of known to take a stand on certain things. So but it's not the president isn't saying to you, Dan, don't take a stand. Or is he?
So I think I'm going to punt because we have a world's expert on how to think about these kinds of issues.
Okay.
So, Denise?
Well, by world expert, you are not joking. I am such a fangirl. I'm so excited that our guest is here today. We have Tom Ehrlich, who is an adjunct professor at Stanford in the School of Education. But his career has spanned so many wonderful years, and he's done amazing things. From going to law school and being on Law Review, he served in the State Department under Kennedy. He's seen President Kennedy and Jackie. He served under Johnson. He served as president of Indiana University, provost of the University of Pennsylvania, dean of the Stanford Law School. But let me just tell you the coolest thing.
Very good.
The coolest thing is several years ago, I got asked on a lunch date by this man. I got asked, he said, I heard you're someone who would be interesting to take to lunch. And Tom took me to lunch. And it was like, what? You're asking me to lunch? I just sat there and listened to him the whole time. So I'm totally excited. Tom, welcome to the show. We are thrilled that you're here.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here, too.
And I will fondly remember that lunch.
So I want Tom to answer the question you gave to me,
okay.
which is what is the right way to think about universities taking a stand on political issues?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, starting as a dean, since you are a dean, I followed your stricture completely with one significant exception. In time of Watergate, before both of you were born, when the president ordered the firing of Elliot Richardson and Archibald Cox, I thought it was so dangerous for our legal system that the president of Harvard, Yale, I mean the dean of law schools at Harvard, Yale, and I issued a joint statement saying that this was a serious blow to the legal framework in which our democracy depends. That apart, I never did. Now, as a university president, of course, you take stands on all sorts of things, issues like sexual harassment and misbehavior of various kinds. But I, too, tried, and I think without exception, not to take issues on stands on political issues, particularly hot-button political issues. I was in a state that leaned heavily Republican. I was a lifetime card-carrying Democrat. But even if it had been reversed, I would have done the same thing because the important thing was educating for our students, not mouthing off about my personal views.
So that's a really nice segue to what you're doing now, which is the American Democracy Project. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Sure. Thank you for asking. It started 16 years ago under the umbrella of an organization called the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. It quickly grew, and it's now 260 campuses. These are broad access campuses like the Cal State system, some 2.2 million students. I had, when I started, our primary focus was community service, cleaning up parks, tutoring kids, working in community kitchens, all sorts of terrifically good things. And one of the books I co-authored called Educating Citizens was about how campuses could prepare students to be civically minded, involved in their communities and making a difference in their communities. And we looked at a dozen campuses that we thought were exemplars of doing that and then told how they did it and what other campuses across the country could learn. We found, though, that not a single campus was educating most of their students to be politically engaged, by which I mean to gain the knowledge, the skills, the attributes to engage in public policy issues and politics. And so we did what academics usually do. We wrote another book, this one called Educating for Democracy, that focused not on a campus because we couldn't find a campus that did this, but on 20 programs that seemed particularly well-suited to educating for political engagement.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Tom Ehrlich about how to educate for political engagement on college campuses. So say a little bit more now. It's one thing to get them to do service and clean up parks, but that wasn't enough.
Right. We want them to say, why is it that our schools need volunteer tutors, our community? Why do we need community kitchens? What are the policy issues involved, and how can we make a difference in those issues?
So going deeper, much deeper.
And actually getting engaged in the political processes that make change, right? So in the course of studying over another three-year period, those 20 courses and programs, we found three major results. One was they really had a significant impact in terms of the abilities, the interest, the skills, and the motivation to get and stay involved in public policy and politics. And we did focus groups, we did surveys, and so forth. The second was these interventions did not change the political ideology of students left to right or right to left.
Oh.
It's generally argued by some, as you well know, that campuses are places where students are pushed far to the left. Well, we saw in these programs it just wasn't true.
So if you if you started out Republican, even after these things, you were still Republican.
Correct.
Okay.
And
interesting.
And you'd be more deeply understanding of the issues, more able to articulate the issues, and more willing to listen to other sides. All the things we want.
Yeah, hallelujah.
All the things that a campus is supposed to be about. But it didn't change the ideological and biases. And third, that a faculty member or staff member was key to the shift from public, from community service generally to focusing on public policy and politics.
Wow.
What does that mean? The faculty member was key? You need a faculty member?
You need a mentor. You need someone who can. So we. Third leg of this was to work with 9 campuses across the country to see if they could educate most of their students to be politically engaged.
Hmm.
And so that was another 3 years of work led by their provost. And the results were really very successful. One campus fell off the rails, but 8 others really did a good job and are still doing a good job today.
But by politically engaged, you mean, well, one, I would assume you mean voting. Is that
absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, but we also know that if you don't vote, you don't do a whole lot of other things. If you do vote, chances are you are doing those things too. So voting alone is not enough. If you don't do that, the democracy suffers. You know.
Tweeting?
Tweeting count as being politically engaged? That's a fair question.
Absolutely. It seems like it to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Not. I don't happen to do it myself, and probably you don't either. But yes, by all means. And indeed, using social media effectively these days, I think is enormously important for us to learn about how to do better in higher education, which I generally think, but particularly being effective in terms of young people involved in politics. You watched the march against gun violence, and those students were armed with their cell phones, and they were effective. They were teaching lessons to us adults and doing it effectively.
And this is different from what you saw when you first started out, because cell phones did not exist in the Kennedy administration.
Yes.
So you've seen it, for better or for worse, come through the ages.
Correct. Yes.
So what would you say, you alluded to the reputation of colleges, and particularly the reputation of college students, and did you start this because they're less civically engaged now than when you started out? As a college student yourself, are you seeing a problem here with lack of political engagement like you've never seen before?
Not that I've never seen before, but it has been acute. And most of the students we educate now know only 2 presidents, Obama and Trump.
Mm.
And for the Obama years, they just didn't pay a whole lot of attention. And we saw that in the election of 2016. And it was true at the Stanford campus. I mean, it was as quiet as can be in early November of 2016. Students were more involved in voting in 2018, not just at Stanford, but across the country. But it's still less than half 18 to 24-year-olds vote. And our democracy simply can't survive unless people are actively engaged. And campuses like ours should be a time and place and where students learn the knowledge and the skills they need to do that and gain the motivation.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are speaking with Tom Ehrlich about active engagement of college students in public policy.
So are you saying that we should spur the students into activism?
Yes, actually I am. Now, I have lived through, I left the State Department where I was working with Undersecretary George Ball trying to get us out of Vietnam and the Vietnam War. I came to Stanford and I spent a lot of time trying to get students out of jail for protesting. Vietnam. So I lived through the protests of the Vietnam War, and I realized that a lot of students didn't get a good education as a result of those. On the other hand, I do believe passionately that progress, that a country started, after all, with a small group of wealthy white men in charge, and it moved slowly, jerkily, toward freedoms by a set of movements. Abolition, women's suffrage, civil rights. And while the movement hasn't been steady, it is movements that do it, and movements are fueled by activism. Now, ideally, the activists are educated in what to do and what makes a difference and how to go about doing it. They're not all, but at least I hope those here and those I touch in the American Democracy Project more generally, those I teach at Stanford and those more generally, have that sense of, yes, it's really important for me to be active.
So let me ask you this question. I've been at a couple of talks now where the president of our university has been, and there have been students at these talks who are protesting. Mm-hmm. And they will take over the stage. They will chant so you can't hear what the speakers mm-hmm. are saying. So, is that the way to do it?
No.
Because it was really annoying to me as an audience member. I want to support student activism, but that was really annoying.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I'm not suggesting you should support all student activism. When I was provost of the University of Pennsylvania, almost every semester we had a sit-in in my office. I didn't like that. And it was very hard to deal because the students in general didn't believe in leadership, so they didn't have anybody in charge. I totally understand what you're saying. On the other hand, part of the blame, I think, is ours as educators because we haven't prepared students to actively know how to make a difference on a college campus. And as a result, they do what they think they can do, which is come and yell at Denise Pope or Dan Schwartz.
Luckily, it wasn't us. It was still the president. I just want to point that out. Nobody yelled at me.
Good.
But I hear you.
Yeah.
So, I think we're going to do more right when we come back with the right way, maybe, to be an activist. This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We will have more with Tom Ehrlich talking about the American Democracy Project and how to get college students to engage in the right way in activism next on Sirius XM Insight 121.
Students focus on what they were told, not paying attention to the situation.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
So they're not going to see anything new because they're so busy trying to copy what you told them.
From the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking today with Tom Ehrlich, who is an adjunct professor at Stanford, and we're talking about college students and activism and the knowledge they need to be responsibly engaged in public policy. And Dan,
I'd like to pick up on effective activism. So there's a scenario where it's admit day, which means students, prospective students at Stanford, they've been admitted, they're coming to decide where they want to come. And then a group of students at Stanford do a protest. They sort of interrupt the what's on the stage and everything. And is this is activism? Is this effective activism?
No, it's not effective. In fact, it has just the reverse effect from the desired aim of those students. I don't know what their particular gripe was about Stanford, but I could imagine a series that would have potentially. But let's just say they wanted to divest in petroleum stocks. And the one thing I am absolutely confident of, it turned off 99% of those who were listening. It infuriated the board of trustees and the president and would make it much harder in the long term to actually have a kind of policy that those students would care about.
So
we make a mistake, I think, if we don't take time and make the effort to educate our students to know how to be effectively advocates.
So I think I know the answer to the next question. So what should a school of education be doing about this?
Mm. Well, it should be...
having you teach a course.
Among other things, teach a course. Thank you for asking. Yes.
Yes.
And I do teach a course. It's focused on undergraduates. It's called Democracy in Crisis, Learning from the Past. I started teaching this because students would come to me after the last election and say, oh, things have never been worse. They're horrible. How can our democracy possibly survive? And I'd say, well, you know, we did have a civil war. We did have Vietnam. We did have Watergate. We had some other really crises. And then I'd say, do you remember what happened with Andrew Johnson? And they'd look at me often blankly and say, who was Andrew Johnson? I don't remember reading him in the newspaper today. And I'd say he was president right after Lincoln was killed, and he tried systematically to destroy everything that Lincoln tried to do, brought the Ku Klux Klan and so forth. All that led me to think if we could have a series of case studies that looked at past crises in our democracy, and see how it was that issues, including public education, came into the political arena, how they were argued about and fought over, and see the messy way in which democracy does work, they would gain insights and understanding not only about our past, which would be useful, but also how to grapple with what I do view as a crisis today in our democracy.
So you're using case studies to teach them how to convert. So a more effective way of activism would be conversing, or what's the way to do this?
First, they need to understand what were the skill sets and what kind of knowledge did those who were involved in those past crises actually need to develop? Mm. And then, of course, how can they develop them? And each one of them writes their own case study by the end of the quarter to help push that. And then they make a TED Talk, of course, about that issue. And over that experience, I think, not alone, you need multiple overlapping, interventions in order to effectively educate in any arena. But I think steps... and educational policy, where students look around and often are bewildered by why in the world does the Department of Education or my state's Department of Education do what it's doing, finding out how to effectively make a difference in those policies is an important part of the education that they should receive.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Tom Ehrlich, professor here, on how to educate kids for effective public policy.
So, Denise, at the K-12 level, are there standards for learning about public policy and civics? Does it like show up in social studies?
Yeah, it does, but it's more like understand the different branches of government, which, believe me, I'll take that at look what we're dealing with now. You need people to understand the different branches of government, at least, and what the checks
There's the military. There's the sports.
You need to go back to school, Dan.
Yeah. But, yeah, I will really stress, I think, while there are a number of organizations pushing on this front, we as a country made it real mistake when we dropped what I call fifth grade civics, which was not just learning about, although you did some of that, but you also learned how to write letters to your congressperson, how to go to a school board and listen and then reflect on what they were doing. In significant part, unfortunately, by the advent of political science as a science, we began to feel that if we told students how to engage, they couldn't be disinterested observers. And I majored in political science, but I think that was a deep mistake for 99% of students who aren't going to be political scientists, but nonetheless need to be actively engaged.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you think about our country now and trying to make change, I think right now colleges are sort of under attack by all sides, by people who are saying kids are coddled and you have these kids who can't hear anything negative and you have to give trigger warnings. You have these activists, you have these like bastions of liberalism, but you're finding hope in the education of kids. Do you think there's hope? Are you a hopeful optimist at this point?
I am, yes. I'm 85 years old, and I'm very optimistic because I got to be. Otherwise, I can't just move forward. Is there cause for concern? Of course. But one of my teachers from Harvard, Sam Huntington, said, some say that democracy is a failure. It's not a failure. It's a disappointment. But it can only be a disappointment because there's hope. I believe that.
Interesting. So we're going to get out of this mess just like we got out of all these other messes.
We are going to get out of it, but only if we get out of the corner and stop sucking our thumbs and move and say it's our mess, not somebody else's to clean up. We've got to be actively, responsibly engaged.
And you think the answer is education?
An answer is a key part of, yes, I think if without an educated citizenry, we can't expect anything good to happen. And Thomas Jefferson said that, and it's been true right through to today.
So in California, we vote on everything. We vote on the controller. Yeah. I have no idea what the controller is. Can't I just outsource my civic responsibility to people who are really smart and thoughtful?
Like
no,
you.
But you can work on changing the system. Does it make sense to vote for the controller? Does it make sense to have 47 initiatives on the ballot? I don't think so either. But the way to change that is to work to
put something on the ballot.
Put something on the ballot
to revise it.
Yeah.
You can't do that alone, but you can do it with groups.
Is college going to become required?
Effectively, I think the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Economic terms, it's going to become, should it be? No, in my view. Mm-hmm. Should there be good other options in terms of apprenticeship and other programs? Yes. But I see it increasingly as this gatekeeper.
Yeah.
And since that's not going to change, let's try to be sure that we enable as many as possible in California and elsewhere to get a college education.
Very good.
Thank you, Tom. I think everyone here knows why I've been such a fangirl, because they got to hear you for 30 minutes. So thank you for being here, and thank all of you for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app, iTunes, and SoundCloud.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.